Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I am your trusty host, Neil Horwitz. Thank you so much for downloading. You can get more information on the podcast and other content, including previous episodes, at dsmsports.net. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at njh287. Really psyched about today's show. It is officially baseball season. Spring is pretty much here. The sun is shining. And the ballparks are starting to fill up with fans. And we're going to be talking to Caitlin Moyer, who is the Director of New Media for the Milwaukee Brewers. She has been with the Brewers for several years and has just a great perspective on the growth of digital and social in Major League Baseball. We're going to really pick her brain and get some great insight from her. But first, we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool is all about Snapchat. You may have known, of course, in the relatively recent past, Snapchat has opened up their geo filters to pretty much anyone for a very low entry fee. It's just a matter of going to snapchat.com/geofilters, and you can submit your geo filter, and then within a certain geofence zone, and then before you know it, you have a geo filter for your fans, for your house, even your office. Definitely something that's taking off all over sports at all levels, from minor leagues to pro and college. And what I have found is a great tool to get some inspiration, some ideas for your Snapchat geofilter. And that is a Tumblr site. It's called Snapchat Filters. Just go to Snapchat Filters, just spelled out, .tumblr.com. And what you see is a great collection that's constantly being updated of geo filters from sites all around the world in all sorts of different categories, from retail locations to just random cities to certainly sports as well. Just a great place to get some inspiration on what some geo filters can look like, what where you can place them, some different ways to visualize them, and ultimately what you think your users will actually use. Of course, most Snapchat users will always, you know, browse all the filters, see what's around, see what's new in their geolocation, but what will get them to actually post with it? And also something to keep in mind as you look at these geo filters and seek for some inspiration is what is going to stand the test of time. The best filters that you're going to create for your venue or your sporting event is going to be one that will not just last one game, but will really make sense for the entire season. So don't just go in with a one-off. You're better off looking at what can someone use today that they'll also be willing and wanting to use, you know, 5 weeks from now, 5 months from now even. And what's going to be really eye-catching that's going to match where they are. That's the whole point of the geo filters, is sort of give people an idea of where your location is and to enhance the photo with it, of course. And what's going to make someone want to share it and also be appealing when someone does come across it. What's going to make them stop and go, wow, that's cool. I want to be there and see that filter. I enjoy this snap. I want to see it again and again and get that FOMO feeling, that feeling that you want to be there where your friend is when you're viewing that snap or that Snapchat story. So always looking out for a place for inspiration. You can never go wrong with keeping an eye on what anyone else is doing in the field, especially your peers. You know, check out what other teams are doing. Look at their Snapchat stories. And if you want to get some quick and a real-time inspiration for Snapchat geofilters, check out this helpful tool. Go to snapchatfilters.tumblr.com. And hopefully you'll get inspired today and you can start creating your own awesome geofilters. All right, that's this episode's helpful tool, snapchatfilters.tumblr.com. Check it out, get inspired, create your own today, and I hope to see it. All right, hope you enjoy the episode's helpful tool, and we'll be right back for a really good conversation with the Director of New Media for the Milwaukee Brewers, Caitlin Moyer, coming right up. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, and now we are pleased to be joined by one of the best in the business in working in baseball, and that is Caitlin Moyer. She's the Director of New Media for the Milwaukee Brewers Baseball Club. Welcome to the podcast, Caitlin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's going to be great to talk to you. Baseball time of year right now. Spring is definitely right around here, and we can't wait to see the Brewers and all the baseball clubs get back into action. But before we have a conversation today, before we get into sort of the substance of it, we
You have a really, really cool background. You've been in baseball a long time, worked your way up with the Brewers. So, I guess give us an idea of where you came from, going back to your school days and how you worked your way up in the space. And any tips for people that want to do what you do?
Sure, of course. I'm born and raised in Milwaukee and never really left. I went to school here at Marquette University, and while I was at Marquette for my undergrad, I was studying public relations and marketing, and I was able to get a internship with the Brewers in the corporate marketing side of things, so more on the sponsorship. And it really solidified for me that I wanted to work in baseball. Originally, I thought maybe I wanted to be a sports journalist, and I play golf, so I have an affinity for golf. At the time, I really liked hockey, and I loved baseball. So I kind of was thinking, one of those sports would be right fit for me. But then, just my college thinking, I said, I don't want to have a deadline every day, so I don't know if I want to go into journalism. It kind of scared me off and steered me toward PR and marketing. And kind of silly thinking, looking back, since marketing has a ton of deadlines every day, as does any job. However, it all ended up really well for me. After that, kept my got my foot in the door with the Brewers and the corporate marketing side of things, and just never really took it out from there. Was part of the in-game promotion squad, our Brew Crew, which runs our everything from our t-shirt toss, dancing on the dugout, to running the sausage race. So did that while I was finishing up my undergrad. Got my start here as a marketing coordinator, kind of a jack of all trades. At the time, it was just me and my boss, Kathy Schwab. She's the senior director of marketing. So I thought to myself, if I just don't screw this up, I can turn this into a full-time gig. And here we are, about 13 years later. Have many different roles along the way. Really started out in the advertising, consumer marketing side of things once I became full-time. And as social media became a thing, we kind of added it to our marketing repertoire, and then it just became very apparent that to do it right, you're going to need to have someone dedicated to it and to shape a department around the area. So, in a nutshell, yeah, I've been around for a long time and had the fortunate opportunity to advance my career here.
That's great. So I guess it's not anything magic that you were able to really take that opportunity of that internship and seize it and grow with it. But how did you get the opportunity from Marquette in the first place? It's just a matter of knowing the right people, networking, asking the right questions.
The opportunity in the first place, I just interviewed, and at the time, there were a couple of other people that were interviewing along with me, and they were going to be graduating. They were going to be seniors. So the people at the Brewers at the time were very upfront with me. They said, "We really like you, but we want to give these folks an opportunity, and maybe next year you can work for us." And I didn't know if they were just trying to like let me down gently or if they were really genuine, but I made sure that I stayed in touch and that I was networking, and networking would be a tip I would have for anyone. I mean, it's kind of cliche, but it does work to kind of stay in touch and to stay top of mind. And so, sure enough, the internship came around the next year. I had kept in touch, got the internship. Once I was in the internship, I just made it a point to know as many people in the organization and always be willing to help, even outside of that department that I was in. I was very interested in broadcast, and could I go see the truck? Can I help out with community relations events, things like that? So I think that was pretty key for me, was just getting to know as many people, and I think that's still key. The interns here, we have so many. Every single department has at least one, from accounting and grounds crew to marketing, et cetera. And the ones that stick out are the ones that, want to talk to you and pick your brain, or can they offer a hand? And there's so many other people that are really good, but they just keep their heads down and stay in their department or don't leave their cubicle and kind of miss out on that opportunity.
Oh, no, I think that's really good advice. Is not just to meet everybody, but learn a little about what everyone does, pick up all the skills you have, and before you know it, your internship ships up, and all of a sudden your bosses are like, "Well, geez, this person has so much skills and so much experience now that they're too indispensable to let get away." So I guess good for you, and good advice to anyone that's listening and wants to make the most of an internship as well. So I guess early on, you certainly were more, like you said, on the straight marketing side, a little bit of corporate partnerships as well. And so did that, how has that sort of influenced the way that you've evolved into your job today with more of the content, new media side, social media side? Were you more focused on sort of the business bottom line metrics, so to speak, when you were first starting out there?
I think that it was all really a perfect storm. I mentioned, you know, first of all, my love of journalism and wanting to write and, you know, being able to carry that over into social media. I have a blog with the club, and the blog is a big part of what we use for content on social. So that gave me an outlet for that. You know, having a little bit of the corporate experience from my time as an intern, you know, helping balance some of the sales side of social media, the marketing experience, how do we, you know, promote stuff on our channels, knowing that our channels are not made just for advertising and used as a megaphone, but how do we get people engaged with us and interested in what we have to offer? So balancing a lot of different demands across the organization and figuring out the right fit and the right timing and the right message. I think it was just really made for me, to be quite honest.
And I think a lot of us today, we almost take for granted now that content and social media really should be about content and fan engagement and all that stuff first before the advertising marketing. That's just happened sort of organically anyway because they're engaging with the product. But was that sort of an overnight? Did that change happen overnight for the Brewers, or as Facebook and Twitter and Instagram started coming up, was it sort of a gradual evolution to understand that these are not just a new broadcast channel? This is a whole new paradigm of interacting with fans.
It's kind of interesting when those things first came out, and I, you know, took them up the ladder. People were kind of, I don't want to say afraid of them, but it was just an unknown. And it was like, okay, well, if you think that's a place we should be, then yeah, we should be there. So for the longest time, it was actually, you know, an uphill battle, so to speak. Like, hey, you know, we want to do this for Facebook, or we want to do this for Twitter. And it wasn't until more recently when people are coming to us and trying to flood the channels with their own messages from across the organization, where we're really having to make some decisions and to rein some things in. So a lot of it was me, you know, sitting in meetings and someone would bring up something. Well, do you want me to cover that for social media? And then they would say, oh yeah, sure. They weren't quite thinking along those lines yet. And now it's just, you know, we have to be more cautious than ever with all the algorithms and the way that brands are being penalized on some of these sites. And so we just want to be more careful and be more precise with our content than ever before. So it's an education process, that's for sure.
And has marketing always sort of been in a part of that social media conversation? Was it more under PR at first, or you sort of, I guess, created this new media department almost out of necessity? But how has it interfaced with the marketing team overall, and how has it maybe evolved since you've been there?
Yep, I grew up in the marketing department, so we just kind of took it on as Twitter became a thing, as Facebook became a thing. We got these accounts and. We use them as and with my PR background personally, you know, I recognize right away you can't just, you know, blanket this with sales messages. So it was a good balance of just news and updates and fun with some of our marketing messages mixed in. And then when this position was created in the off season before the 2014 season, it moved over to communications. But it's still very, very strongly tied to marketing. I mean, you know how important graphics and visuals are for every single platform. So, you know, marketing has a heavy hand in helping me create a lot of those things, videos, things like that.
And was that really a necessary evolution for the organization, where all of a sudden you didn't just have to create a graphic for, you know, the TV ad or the billboard, but all of a sudden now we need our design team, our creative team, to also build stuff for social, for Facebook, for Instagram, for the website as well, of course. Has that been just a whole shift in the way the organization's infrastructure is designed?
We are still shifting. This is definitely a transition and it's something we're trying to balance. We have an internal design team, so limited resources. They're highly talented, but it's balancing, you know, how does a Twitter graphic stack up with, you know, the design of the season tickets or things like that. You know, there's just so many hours in a day. So we are, you know, adapting, hoping to expand staff in the near future, but working with the tools that we have, picking up some Photoshop skills, things like that.
Okay. So has the content overall always been a big focus for the Brewers, or have you even seen that become a bigger thing since you've been there? I mean, maybe when you first suggested the idea that I should do a blog about what I'm seeing and our experience, you know, interacting firsthand with the players and the fans, or has, you know, even early on it was just a matter of, oh, the newspaper will cover this or that, and the team doesn't necessarily have to, but is that really something? Was there sort of that light bulb moment, I guess, where all of a sudden, hey, we're the team, we can produce our own content, and we're going to buy into it?
I think that was something that I recognized right away, and that was one of the big selling points of, look, we can put this out there ourselves. I remember very distinctly when I first started, and Facebook was still only open to college students, and I still mm-hmm. had my college address. I created an event. You know, they were kind of a skeleton of what an event is now, but I said, well, wow, we have student nights at the ballpark, 50% off on Friday nights with your student ID. I'm going to create an event for this, and I'm going to invite all my friends. So I invited all my friends, and mm-hmm. I was stunned when 2 days later there was, you know, let's say I invited 100 people. 2 days later, there's 700 people on this
wow.
event. And here I am, you know, just in my first job right out of college. And I'm like, huh, all right, I got onto something. Let me invite those other people and to be my friend. So next time I can start with 700 and see where this goes. And pretty soon I had all these friends that I didn't really know who they were on my personal page. And I was like, ooh, something's not right there. But as soon as brand pages became a thing, we jumped on that. And, you know, just figuring out the best way to use the platform. I think it has taken some people a little bit longer to understand, like, hey, we are creating our own news. We don't necessarily need to have this press release go out. People are watching our Twitter account and they're reporting based on Twitter, things like that. But by no means am I saying that the media isn't important, because it still mm-hmm. has a huge role. But I think I think we're realizing how important social media can be in telling our own stories.
Oh, most definitely. And being able to even just break your own news and even have reporters who are, you know, retweeting you, for example.
Exactly.
How about the other side of the coin when it comes to content? It's not just controlling the story and putting out, you know, the transaction or the quote or whatnot, but also really being able to have that fun content and being able to justify, yeah, we want to get a quick little video of Screw Grenette, you know, going on a screw in the clubhouse, or, you know, the guys sort of playing around after practice at spring training. Has that been a more recent phenomenon where we're going to get all these sort of fun videos that we know fans enjoy versus the quote-unquote traditional media stuff that was more prominent in the past?
Yes, for sure. So when I took over this role, I think that is when we really said, okay, we're going all in on this social media thing and let's see where it goes. So in 2014, it was just a perfect storm and the team got off to a really, really hot start. So pretty much everything we did turned to gold content-wise. It was just content kind of created itself. I just sat back and was like, okay, well, we should put this out on Facebook and we should retweet this and we should do this. And we just had, it was just, you know, it's kind of easier when you're winning. Then we didn't have such a great September and we had a really tough season last year, but there was still a place for some of that content. Even in the midst of a down season, you tone down the silliness or the fun so much what you try to do is humanize these guys. It sounds terrible to say that, but, you know, make them more personable and more relatable.
Yeah.
So, you know, Mother's Day and Father's Day was huge for us. Let me have a picture of you with your mom and dad, or if you're a father, you with your kids, and let's put that out there and show people, like, hey, these guys are dads too, or these guys are, you know, someone's kids, and you know, how they're relating. And I think that people like to see that. They like to see the guys doing good in the community, interacting with children, signing autographs, things like that. And I think that that goes a long way and to kind of building those relationships and having fans kind of, you know, rally around the guy, whether he's doing well or if he's struggling.
Oh, definitely. You hit the nail on the head there with just making these guys relatable so that you do emotionally buy in, and it's not just a player on the field, but a real person out there with a life, with perhaps kids and a marriage and other things besides their day job, which is, of course, playing baseball.
Exactly.
But I guess I did also want to ask them too, because I think a lot of that's now more at least accepted, I think, by a lot of people in the media space and even marketing space, that there's more to it than just putting out quotes and putting out sales messaging. But I guess it does ultimately come down to how much the clubhouse is willing to cooperate. Baseball operations might be different across different teams of the league, different sports are a little bit different when it comes to access and players and when the team's playing well versus not well. But long-winded way of saying, I guess, is how has the baseball operations worked with the sort of PR and content team to facilitate, and also how you guys have maybe, you know, tread carefully and knowing when it's okay to have fun and do those things on the side and when it's not?
You know what, they've been fantastic. I've been through, you know, two different regimes here, just within this role, and, you know, both have been very open and, easy to work with. I think, you know, it just comes from building a trust with people, in those positions. And, you know, I do social media training with the clubhouse every year, and I, you know, let the people know I kind of serve as an in-house reporter in ways, but, you know, I'm not looking for the dirty scoop. You know, I'm looking to make, my job is to make them look good. I'm never going to put out an unflattering photo or make fun of them or, you know, things like that. Like, it's our job to put them in the best light possible. So it's earning the trust of the management and the players themselves, and getting them to buy in. And it's been a lot easier as the players have gotten a lot younger. You're seeing guys coming to us, and they've grown up with it. Even in the last 3 years in this role, first thing would be when a guy would come up, he'd say, hey, can you help me get verified on Twitter? Sure, we can help you do that. Now the first thing is, can you help me get verified on Instagram? And now they're curious about Snapchat. So it's, you know, it's they understand it. There's still some veterans on the team that really want nothing to do with social media as far as their own platforms, but they're still realizing that they have a way that they can help us as an organization and a brand create content for our channels without having to put themselves out there. I'm very, very fortunate that our organization has been has embraced it.
Well, you know what they say in sports too. You can get lucky, but you also got to create your own luck. And I think, you know, doing that training every year and putting it all out there, that this is why we're doing this, and it's for your benefit. I think that definitely goes a long way. Does baseball ops really, is it almost not grudging support, but is it also very clear that this is not just to engage fans and you know, let Caitlin have fun in the clubhouse once in a while, but it's really, this is helping move the bottom line. This is helping market the team and helping us overall have success so we can pay your salaries every year.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's an understanding there. They see that, you know, there's some trepidation, and I understand why there's trepidation. You know, social media can serve as a distraction. If a guy's not playing well, he might be getting, you know, his mentions might not look so pretty. He might need to step away from it for a while. Those types of things. But as far as what we do, you know, we're, again, there to put them in the best light possible. And, you know, if we're not performing well, let's focus on off the field. What are they doing in the community? You know, and being, having me been in this role or with the organization for so long, you know, I have a really good feel for when's appropriate to do something silly and when's it's not. So, I think that trust is huge.
Definitely. And all right, well, let's shift briefly. I mean, you're talking about certainly having to be able to pivot when the team's performance merits it, whether it's for better or for worse. And I mean, now we're on the precipice of a long season where, you know, everyone has hopes of a World Series heading out of spring training, and you are, I guess, trying to balance all this content for the season as well as the ups and downs that will necessitate going back to the idea of pivoting. So as you prepare for a season now, how do you sort of build in the as much preparation of content and content calendars and such as you can, while also knowing that you're going to have to pivot at, depending on the day of the week and how the team's performing?
Yeah, we start the year with a content calendar that is jam-packed with everything that we can possibly put on it in advance. So those are things like, okay, we know our whole schedule. We know that there's games on these days, and with those games comes a specific set of content. It's your lineup, your in-game updates, your post-game. That's built in, win or lose. You've got things like the player birthdays. You've got events in your community. You've got holidays. All that stuff is not going to change. And so you have all that. You plan for that the best you can. You plan a few of your promotions the best you can, your giveaways, things like that. And then you kind of sit back and you wait to see what the team performance dictates. And you roll with that. So good or bad, you adjust accordingly and on the fly. Or if, say, a stray dog wanders into your spring training camp, you adjust to that as well. So I try to just get ahead of as much as possible just so you can be ready to react whatever something jumps in your lap.
And is the marketing team built in to be that nimble now as well? Has that been a gradual process of making sure that when a dog does rumble onto the spring training facility, that you guys are ready to go at it with a marketing and content eye?
I'm not so sure about the marketing team, to be honest with you. Like I said, they have a lot of responsibilities from across the whole organization. So that's something that we're getting better with. But, you know, when there is something big like that, pretty much the whole organization changes course. When it's just something that kind of impacts the social world, then we roll with it that way. We capture the content on our own. Mm-hmm.
And then how does the voice and the messaging kind of adjust too with the ups and downs of the season? Are you constantly communicating with the PR team, with the marketing team, so that everyone is speaking with the same voice and the same values and ideas?
Oh, yeah, for sure. A good example and a publicized example is last year. So I mentioned in 2014, we came out of the gates really hot. We didn't finish the season as we planned. So marketing campaign out of the gates for the start of 2015 was very much a redemption, finish what we started type of message. But we did not start out of the gate so well last year. So we quickly changed course even on the marketing side and shifted more toward the atmospheric stuff at the ballpark and, you know, the fun you can have here regardless of the on-field product. And like I said, I shifted to community and fan support, things like that. So they're ready to adapt. We're in kind of in a rebuilding mode here, so it's tough to know what to expect. We have a lot of new faces on the roster and a lot of young guys, so I think that we could really surprise some people. So I'm ready to go either way.
And then when it comes to that, I guess, how does it actually play out in real life? Are you constantly meeting with the marketing team and PR team to make sure that message is consistent, and is it just a matter of just having an open door at all times?
Yep, both. I mean, we have scheduled meetings, weekly meetings all the time, even sitting in meetings with ticket folks so we know how tickets are trending for certain series or promotional nights. What do we need to hit a little harder, brainstorm for XYZ, those types of things. So even though I'm technically in the PR department, now I'm still a lot of different meetings, a lot of input, everyone really.
That certainly makes sense. And I guess just shifting a little bit more with that, too, I guess I just wanted to jump off that point really quickly and ask, too, then, is social media really looked at as a powerful way to reach those fans and craft that message so that when the team is playing poorly, that we know that, hey, we can use Twitter and Facebook and Instagram to show all the good stuff that our team is still doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, it's just it's another tool that can be really helpful in our arsenal to reach fans in good times and in bad times. It's just, you know, figuring out the right messaging and how to embrace it.
Okay. So I guess since shifted along those same lines, since social media really seems to be something that you guys do value to a good degree nowadays, how do you sort of measure the effectiveness of some of that content, some of those social campaigns?
It depends on the campaign. In general, you know, if there's a certain campaign that we're trying to track, whether it's like a certain use of a hashtag or it's a contest where there's entries, or, you know, if we want to see how many retweets or likes something gets, you know, we'll put those metrics in place at the beginning of a campaign and say, this is what success looks like to us for this mm-hmm. type of campaign. But for the everyday general post, you know, we just keep an eye on it and we don't sweat over like, boy, this only got 20 retweets or whatever. You know, we know that good content will rise to the top. So we just focus on putting out the best content possible.
That certainly makes sense. Real quick, just having a great conversation with Director of New Media from the Milwaukee Brewers, Caitlin Moore, learning all about how they make the most of their content, their social media, and really helping to tell the stories of all the players. I wanted to sort of stay on sort of the business side and talk about how the Brewers do utilize content to drive some of those business objectives. I mean, is it just making sure the team is top of mind at all times, so when the giveaways and promotions are announced that everyone's ready for it, or is it more complex than that even?
I think, you know, you hit it on the head. I think, you know, top of mind is big. So trying to let everyone know, you know, we've one of our most successful campaigns has been our countdown to opening day. So for the last few seasons, we started on January 1st, counting down to opening day and engaging fans in a contest. And so, you know, it's really hard to go anywhere around the city. We've engaged that campaign with print ads and billboards and things like that. And it's hard to go anywhere without knowing, you know, pretty much exactly how many days it is to opening day to build that excitement for the season. So yeah, just trying to keep top of mind and to push those objectives across.
Yeah, I love that campaign you guys have going, where you're letting users come up with those creative pictures for the countdown, rather than just doing the old let's throw up a uniform jersey number again for 5 days left, for 6 days left. So really kudos to you on that. It looks like you've gotten some pretty cool submissions from fans too for that campaign.
We definitely have. They never amaze me. Like I said, this is maybe the fourth year that we've done this. The first year we did it all ourselves, and we said, you know what, I think we can crowdsource this. And, yeah, we've just been taken aback at the creativity of some of our fans, way better than anything we could come up with.
I love that. You can really tell that the Brewers fans, you know, they really do love the club and love the franchise and love the traditions, too. I mean, you mentioned the sausage race. You alluded to Hank the Dog. We'll talk more about him in a little bit. Bernie Brewer and, you know, all of the traditions from going down the slide. So I guess something I really noticed the Brewers do a good job of is not just appealing to that tradition and that nostalgia on their social media, but also even turning those traditions into monetizable assets as well, whether it's through engagement or through direct sales. And so I guess, where did this sort of come from? Did you guys always know that there were these strong traditions that fans really held dear and they could be tied in more directly with some of the marketing campaigns and just general engagement?
Yeah, I mean, there, Milwaukee's a city steeped very deeply in tradition, and, you know, it's, like I said, I've born and raised here, so it's, you know, it's part of me too. We know that, you know, there's certain things that about being a Brewers fan that are, it's just a Wisconsin thing. It's a Brewers thing. It's what makes us unique. And those are things like Bernie Brewer, the sausage race, tailgating. A lot of other teams have tailgating, but not like we tailgate in Wisconsin. So, it's embracing those things. It's embracing the past. There's a lot of fans that remember, you know, 1982 and those good old days. And there's a lot of younger fans where they, you know, have the recent memories of 2008 and 2011. So it's just kind of stoking that fire and getting people excited for those really iconic Brewers things. Whether that is, you know, showing pictures of them or incorporating them into our campaigns, or you know, Bernie Brewer having his own Twitter account, all of that stuff, really focusing on that Wisconsin tradition.
And I think that's so cool that you mentioned how, you know, a lot of people do look back on the early 80s teams and those great teams with, you know, Robin Young, Cecil Cooper, and all those guys. But I mean, really, when you think about it, the Brewers are a relatively young franchise when it comes to being in Milwaukee. I mean, they've only, you look back on the franchise as a whole, and there was the Milwaukee Braves, and then the Brewers became a thing a little bit later on. And so I guess, has people like Bernie Brewer and Sausage Races and more recently Hank the Dog helped sort of meld the generations together and built that more cohesive community behind the Brewers name?
Sure. I mean, I think that's a good way to put it. I guess I really haven't thought of it that way, but, you know, if you do think about it, you know, people really enjoy a good story and a good legend. So you have, you know, like Hank Aaron from the past, and you have your heroes from 1982 that people still talk about, and you have your current heroes and legends from more recent success. But then you have these other stories that relate to the mascots, like, you know, Bernie Brewer, who's built based on, you know, a true story, and you've got the Sausage Race that was digital and then it came to life, and then Hank the Dog who wandered into the spring training camp and he's awake to Rich's story. So I think people just love a good story, and I think that that is something that spans generations, and mascots are things that, you know, while the players and the team will change, mascots really don't. So that is something that can pass along from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm. And I really love, too, I think it's so creative and cool that if I'm a Brewers fan, I can take my family and pay a little bit of money and go slide down Bernie's slide, just like he does, you know, at the games. And is that, like, how long has that been going on for you guys? And is that sort of a nice little light bulb moment when you realize people really value these experiences more than just about anything? So let's let them pay for it so that we can actually allow them to have them.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that, you know, people always have wanted to go down the slide. I think it's been a couple of years now that's been, you know, offered as part of an experience on the game day. I think, you know, people just love that behind the scenes access that I think we in sports sometimes take for granted. So, you know, whether it's like the season seat holder getting to watch batting practice on the field, or suite holders, now they can stand out in the outfield during BP and catch balls if they want. You know, it's just trying to find another way to bring the fan closer to the game. Another thing that comes to mind is our sleepover at Miller Park, our Field of Sweet Dreams event. Being able to camp out on the grass that your favorite major leaguers play on every day, that's just something special. So I think, you know, giving the fans access to that is you know, something that they've been wanting and fulfills a desire.
I love that. When you guys come up with these concepts and ideas, are you thinking of how can we help the fans, especially the families, you know, have a sort of bonding experience with kids and, you know, making sure that the kids are becoming fans early on and falling in love with the team just like their parents before them?
Oh, absolutely. We pride ourselves on being really fan-friendly here at Miller Park, so the family is a big focus for us. So, you know, figuring out what those events are, but we're, you know, to be able to draw decent numbers of attendance like we have the past few seasons, it takes every man, woman, and child coming out to Miller Park more than once a year, and you know, so it's creating experiences for people of all ages and unique events, and just getting them to come out, and hopefully the next time they come out, they bring their friends and so on and so forth. So you'll see that we have a ton of kind of niche promotions throughout the season as well.
And does social really help to carry the torch for those, and even using targeted ads and such as well, or is it also just putting it out there organically and letting fans see, here's some cool stuff we're doing, tell your friends if you're not interested even?
It definitely, I think social helps, because, you know, on the internet there are, you know, little groups of pockets of people that you can easily reach. that's harder in just, you know, normal day-to-day life. So, for example, like a Stitch and Pitch promotion, where if you can come out and you love to knit or needlepoint or crochet, you can come out as a group and you can socialize before the game, and then you can work at your craft while the game is going on. So to be able to, you know, tweet at some of these yarn shops or these needlework shops and invite them out to the game, that helps us spread the word, you know, in a different way than maybe sending a flyer to the shop, because maybe they're going to retweet our tweet and now all their followers are suddenly seeing it. Or maybe they're organizing a bus trip, whereas, you know, we might send a flyer and it's dependent on the person that opens it and if they're interested, if they toss it aside, that kind of thing.
Oh, no, I love that. That's fantastic. And it really does speak to when you have to fill the ballpark, you know, 81 plus times a year, being able to go after those niche targets can really help a lot. We've took a couple minutes left here before we get to this episode's shareable stat, talking to Caitlin Moyer, Director of New Media with the Milwaukee Brewers. I have to ask you, we've already talked about it a little bit, so give us the story of Hank the dog and how he sort of became part of everything Brewers, and also the more recent press conference that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, sure. So 2014 was the year that, you know, Hank wandered into spring training. That was awesome. So I was headed down to spring training for a more extended stay than usual. In the past, I had gone for a few days to do some marketing, maybe shoot some TV commercials. But I was going to go down for an extended stay with the goal of really getting to know the players and have them feel comfortable around me. But this time, you know, I got a call right before I boarded the plane that hey, a stray dog had wandered into spring training camp, and would I put out, you know, a picture of him, and we're trying to help find his owner. I said, okay, that's interesting. And so I put the picture out there, and it just kind of just took off from there. I boarded the plane, went down to spring training, and the dog was just incredible. He's, you know, got a disease for being a stray, and, you know, being, you know, having hit by a car and just abandoned. You know, he could have been a mean street dog, but he was just the sweetest dog, and the way he gravitated toward the players and the way the players gravitated toward him, it just made for such great social media content, and it kind of took off from there and went viral. I mean, the main purpose was to try to find his owner, and I can't believe that with all the publicity we received, you know, an owner never came forward. So we decided as a club to adopt him, and officially he lives with our general counsel in a suburb of Milwaukee, but she helps bring him back for any appearances that he has within the community, and he's become a big part of the organization and the organization story. He won the Dog of the Year Award, which was presented in L.A. last January, so I got to go to L.A. with Hank for the World Dog Award, and got the award from Paris Hilton. So something I never thought I'd do in my career was photograph a dog with Paris Hilton. But yeah, it's been a crazy wild ride. And the best part is it's really given a lot of attention to a stray dog. And the community have been amazing to work with. So it's been able to provide a lot of benefits for the humane society awareness and raising money through the sale of Hank merchandise. It's been fantastic.
Oh, that's great. What a great serendipitous way to find a new way to activate and get some great earned media and engagement with fans, and also, you know, really help a good cause too. That's so much fun, and I still continue to love following Hank and all that fun stuff. But Caitlin, we can talk Hank all day. There's still so much more. I know that the recent sort of controversy as well with his press conference, and I love picking your brain about the Brewers, but we're going to have some little more fun with you in our Cavorting with Caitlin segment coming up. But first, we have the episode's shareable stat coming up right now.
Really enjoy talking to Caitlin. Just a wealth of knowledge and experience there in her time with the Brewers, and looking forward to a great season with her, with Hank the pup, and of course keeping an eye on all the great sausage races and everything else fun that they're doing over there in Milwaukee. But we'll have a little more fun with Caitlin and come up with our quick hitting questions. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat is all about Instagram and video. You may have noticed the beginning of April, end of March that Instagram increased their video from 15 seconds to allow people to post up to 60 seconds of video. Quite a big change, and made a lot of headwind when they made the announcement. And one stat that really stood out in Instagram's announcement in their blog was that in the last 6 months, so dating back to around November, Instagram video view time increased over 40%. 40% increase in video view time by users on Instagram. And that was a big impetus for their increase of the video time limit to 60 seconds. And what does that mean for anyone listening to this podcast? It's that, well, video is here to stay. It is a key part of any social media strategy, especially in the mobile space. So if you have not made a concerted effort to invest time, resources, maybe even some budget into a mobile video strategy, it's time to go back and rethink it and get back involved in it. It doesn't mean you just start shooting any video for the heck of it, but it also doesn't mean that you have to make these produced fancy videos that may be likely to be seen on cable or on the video board at the arena or the venue. It means that you should be looking for opportunities where sharing video can add value to users and do so in a compelling manner. It doesn't mean you can completely disrupt your Instagram strategy. Instagram, first and foremost, is about emotion, conveying emotion, in this case through video. It's still all about capturing the eye with some compelling visuals and really making someone feel goosebumps when they watch that video. That's ultimately what you're trying to do, is build these ties, get someone's juices flowing, get someone to feel that connection to you and your brand. That's what Instagram is all about, and that's what you can do with effective mobile video. When you're sitting around and watching the guys warm up for a game or getting a little all access and behind the scenes, Instagram is still a place where you can share those compelling videos that are really eye-catching, really compelling, and it's something that people are willing to spend time with. Video is starting to become a major part of any social media network, and Instagram is jumping right into the fray. And especially now with Instagram's algorithm coming on strong, you can no doubt bet that video is going to be a big part of that algorithm, and certainly will start to get priority in terms of what content is being served to fans browsing their feed. So at the end of the day, look for opportunities to shoot video. You have your mobile phone with you at all times. Look for that opportunity where you can give fans a little glimpse. And again, look at your video content. Look at your Instagram content. Are you feeling goosebumps when you watch it? Will a fan feel a little warmth inside, a little connection to your brand and your team and your players when they view that video? Will the thumbnail even, will the image get them to stop and pay attention and when they're browsing the newsfeed? Is it a thumb stopper, as I always like to say? So basically, looking back at the shareable stat, Instagram video viewing increasing over 40% in the last 6 months, precipitating Instagram's big buy-in into video. That means it's time for you to buy into video also, if you haven't done so already. All right, that's the episode of Shareable Stat, straight from Instagram's blog, and definitely something to keep an eye on and something to take action on yourself as well. Hope you start creating some cool videos today, and we will be right back to pick Caitlin Moyer's brain a little more. She is the director of new media for the Milwaukee Brewers, and we're going to have a little fun with her coming up in our quick hitting question segment with Caitlin Moyer, coming right up right now.
All right, that was this episode's Shareable Stat, and now we're right back with the director of new media for the Milwaukee Brewers, Caitlin Moyer. Caitlin, you've been fantastic. You survived your crazy interview with me. Are you now ready for some cavorting with Caitlin?
I am. Let's bring it on.
Let's have a little fun. All right, number one. The number one lesson you have learned from students that you teach as an adjunct professor at Marquette University.
I think the best thing about my students is that they help me stay current and connected. I'm always picking their brains about what's hot, what's not, what's the newest social media platform going to be, things like that. So, I'm not by any means think that I'm an expert on, the current trends. I'm always looking to other people's opinion, and they're great at helping me stay up to date.
Pretty good. Pretty nice to have a little side job that also serves as some sort of free focus group for you to see what's coming up with the kids these days.
Totally.
Number two for you, Caitlin. The most memorable tweet from your time with the Brewers, and why?
Most memorable tweet. I think probably, you know, we were just talking about Hank a little bit ago, and I think, you know, sending out that first tweet about Hank and just being like, okay, I'm tweeting about a dog now. Like, what is this all about? And just remembering that and the whole story and the way the season unfolded and everything like that is, talk about being able to be nimble and adapt on the fly, and our whole strategy goes out the window when something like that happens. You have to be able to embrace it.
Oh, I love that. What a great illustration of what we've talked about today, too. And really not knowing that as soon as you press that send button for does anyone know this dog, that you would be unleashing a phenomenon that's still strong today.
Unleashing is a good way to put it.
Perfect. Completely unintended. Number three for you, Caitlin. The social platform on which you think the Brewers execute the best and the one you want to see the Brewers improve on in 2016.
Okay, I think we have a pretty good handle on Twitter, and we're 1 year into Snapchat, and I think that we have a lot of fun on that. Goals for this year is to really improve our Instagram strategy, because I know that their algorithm is changing, and we want to stay on top of that. Also, want to get more into like Periscope and live streaming, and I haven't really done anything with the Facebook live streaming yet, so looking for some good opportunities there.
Very nice. Is there any sort of league-wide level conversation with what can and can't be live streamed?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, game action is a no-no for understandable reasons. I'm just a little nervous because it is live and you are around, you know, kind of like a locker room setting. So
totally.
Some of the stuff that I've experimented with has been more you know, more of a, like a press conference or an event or something that's more scripted. So we'll take a little bit more risks this year and see what we can come up with.
Hey, we'll be looking out for it. I love it. Number four for you, Caitlin. The best personality in the clubhouse currently with the Brewers and the best personality ever in your time with the Brewers.
Oh, my gosh, that's so hard. Well, Bob Uecker is a huge personality for us, but on the current team, I think Will Smith is, he's a reliever for us, and he is a great sport when it comes to all things social media with a name like Will Smith that just sets itself up for a lot of fun interaction, and he's taken it like a champ, and he's always willing to help us out with stuff, and he's done, you know, everything from rap videos to undercover reporting and sharing some of his mom's corny jokes with the fans. So we always look forward to seeing what he's coming up with. First personality ever is a really tough question to answer too. But I do think that, you know, Carlos Gomez had a really infectious energy in just the way he plays the game and his social media presence. And, you know, something sticks out for me during his time here was this epic team selfie that he took on photo day, and he was our best social media, he won our social media award that year. So I'd have to say Gomez is up.
Beautiful. I love that. Definitely some plenty of fun happening in the Brewers clubhouse. All right, number five for you, the metrics that matter most to you when it comes to the Brewers social media and why?
You know, I think anything that really shows engagement, I'm not too focused on ROI. I think it's, you know, are people sharing it? If it's a user-generated contest, are they participating? I think, you know, the shares are really what's important, or the retweets, because that's reaching not only our first-level fans, but their friends and their connections. Same with when they generate the content on their own. So having almost that third-party endorsement is where it's at for us.
No, I think that's huge. Definitely. I like that, the idea of the first level fans and then passing it on to the next levels and being able to recruit more and more. All right, number six for you. I always love getting to know the food in different places. So tell me the best food at the Brewers ballpark and also the best food overall to get in Milwaukee.
Oh, boy. I love food. The best food at the Brewers ballpark, I would say, is AJ Bombers. So they're a local burger joint here in Milwaukee, and they have a satellite location. at Miller Park, and they make fantastic burgers. Lately, they've been doing a featured burger that's based on something that a player has created. So, like, last year, we had one that had, like, a fried egg on it or macaroni and cheese on it.
Wow.
So you can find some really unique burgers there. They also serve tots and custard. So they're always, like, you know, if I'm not going to dine on the press box food for the night, I might sneak over there and get my meal. Best food to get in Milwaukee, I mean, they're a local, AJ Bombers is a local place, so they're definitely on the list of the best food to get in Milwaukee. And I also really like Thai food, so there's some great Thai restaurants, and pizza, there's a ton of great pizza places, so there's a ton of great food here in Milwaukee.
Oh, I love the player-themed burgers. That's fantastic. What a great way to get them involved and really engage the fans with the product, too. That's fantastic. All right, number seven for you. What is your in-game engagement strategy? And does it differ depending on, you know, the day of the week the team's playing and the time and the context?
I think, you know, our in-game engagement strategy is pretty standard for, you know, whatever game is the day of the week. You know, just telling the fans what the lineup is, putting out a tune-in message, making sure that they're, you know, either coming to the ballpark or they're watching along with us. And then Twitter is pretty much up-to-the-minute updates with what's going on in the game. And then the other channels, it's sprinkling some highlights or some fun photos and things like that. And then it, you know, just depends on how the game itself is going. If there are great highlights or great moments, or, you know, if it's a rough run, we might back off a little bit. So you just kind of have to be flexible and go from there.
Okay, so it's not so much a play-by-play, but really is more of curating the highlights and sort of the best of for the fans.
Yeah. I'd say Twitter is more of a play-by-play with, you know, the atmospheric elements sprinkled in. But, yeah, the best of you'll find on Facebook or Instagram. Snapchat is the ultimate storytelling tool for us, so we have a lot of fun with that one. We try to be unique on each platform. So if you follow us everywhere, you'll get a little bit of everything.
Sounds like the content team is certainly busy on during the games, serving all those platforms too. All right, number eight for you, Caitlin. Your number one piece of advice for someone that is aspiring to work in social media and sports, and number one tip for someone that currently is working in social media and sports.
I think for someone who's inspiring and for someone who's currently in it, I think it's pretty much the same thing. And I know it's kind of cliche, but it's really about connecting. And it's not, you know, but if you're connecting with people and you're networking, it shouldn't be so much self-serving. It's like, you know, yeah, if you're aspiring and you want to get a job, that's understandable, but can you still offer that person something in return? Here, hey, I saw this interesting article that, you know, this might help you in your business. Those kind of things, I think that goes a long way. And then same thing when you're currently practicing, you know, just being really helpful and reaching out, not only when you need something, but maybe to compliment someone or things like that. I think too often we get into this habit of, you know, when you need something, then you reach out. But it's staying in contact, you know, just year-round, and even it's just to say, hey, how's it going?
Totally. Being part of the community and building and maintaining relationships, that's perfect. All right, next up for you, Caitlin, really having fun talking to the director of new media for the Milwaukee Brewers, Caitlin Moyer. What has been your most memorable or most successful marketing campaign that you've helped with in your time with the Brewers?
I would say we talked about it earlier, the countdown to opening day. It's been really successful. I mean, like, the first year we did it all ourselves. We held a contest in conjunction with it to ask fans how they're counting down. The fans blew us away. They've been carrying it ever since. It's not getting old. They're really creative. You can't ask for a better engagement, and it is a regular piece of content to have in the off season. It bridges the gap really well.
Excellent. All right, almost done with you, Caitlin. We talked a little about, you know, Will Smith kicking butt on social media for the Brewers recently. So I guess let's go away from the Brewers and let's say, who is the best non-Brewers Major League Baseball player who is on social media and why?
Oh boy, throwing me for a loop. Okay, well, he's not currently on the Brewers, but he is in our minor league system, and he's done some broadcast work for us as well. Tim Dillard, he goes by the handle Dim Tillard. That's DimTillard. He is the king of Dub Smash. He involves all his teammates in Dub Smash. He involves other broadcasters in Dub Smash. He like dresses up and orchestrates these things, and he just has a really great personality. He writes a blog. He's a must follow.
Oh, I love that. I have to check out some Tim Dillard Dub Smashes for sure. All right, last one for you, Caitlin. Still got hope that the Brewers are gonna take home the crown. But tell me, if not the Brewers, who is your pick for the best chance to win the World Series this year?
Oh my gosh. I am going to say, is it the year for the Giants to win again?
the even year thing. We'll go
Yeah.
with them. We'll hope, as a Padres fan, I'm hoping that it's anyone but them. So I'll go ahead and root for the Brewers too, for that matter.
But
we'll see.
we open against them this series, for opening series. So when we will try to take care of them right away.
Oh, I love that. All right, Caitlin, you survived your Cavortin with Caitlin segment. Had a lot of fun getting to know you more. Now your chance to take over the podcast briefly and tell us your social media all-star to follow. You know, someone on Twitter or a blogger, who they are and why they're worth following.
A social media all-star to follow. I'm going to go back to the Giants. Brian Srebian. He is kind of the king when it comes to social media. I think that, he gets the advantage of being out there in San Francisco, where a lot of the stuff starts. But S. Rabe on social, he's someone that's really influential and is always on top of the trends.
He is a rock star and a great guy too. So really, really good shout out there. How about yourself? Where can we find you as well as the Brewers all over social digital media?
So the Brewers are on every single platform that you can think of. For the most part, our handle is just Brewers. That's Brewers on Facebook. We're Brewers on Twitter. Brewers on Instagram. Brewers on Snapchat. So yeah, you can find us just by searching Brewers. And also going to brewers.com/connect on our website has a list of not only our accounts, but it also has all of our players that are on. So you can follow them as well. And then myself, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm just at C Moyer. That's Cmoyer. Twitter is my favorite platform. I'm on all the other ones, of course, but Twitter is the one where I'm most active and most engaged. So would love to hear from anyone and let me know your thoughts on our podcast, or if you want to carry on the conversation, I'd love to do so.
Oh, and you are a great follow on Twitter, not just for fun brewer stuff, but great insight into the space. And you've really offered a ton of knowledge today. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. It's a crazy long baseball season ahead of you, but you've been fantastic. And thank you so much for the time today, Caitlin.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
And go Brewers.
Thank you so much again to Caitlin Moyer, Director of New Media for the Milwaukee Brewers. Again, just such a personable young woman, been in baseball for a long time, possesses a lot of great experience and knowledge, and we were lucky to steal a bit of her time today as she was preparing for opening day and the long 162-plus game Major League Baseball season that has her working nonstop. So I really appreciate her being so generous with her knowledge and her time. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much again for listening and downloading. And you, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at NJH287. And of course, get more podcasts and content at DSMSports.net. We'll see you next time on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.